We're doing our special class on the Jewish home with a special section on Chozer B'Tshuva and the challenges of building a home as a Chozer B'Tshuva or spouse who's a Chozer B'Tshuva. And we had begun discussing the ups and the downs, dealing with ourselves, dealing with our partner, and their ups and downs. And our first area of exploration was with regards to a tendency to aspire to be unique and to sometimes take on stringencies or extraordinary levels of observance in specific areas, which a person will feel more satisfaction, but they're not necessarily that important. And today, I want to continue in that vein. Sometimes we give certain stress to areas in halacha or areas in customs, a stress that's completely disproportionate. We do it in the name of Judaism. So sometimes we attended a class where we got that understanding, and it can have huge ramifications in our lives. I'll tell you a story about myself. When I was studying under one of the biggest rabbis, maybe the biggest rabbi I had the good fortune to study under, at one point he said to us that a person who wants to be really pious wouldn't take a loan with interest and rely on the heter, the permitted way, the permissive loophole we have in halacha to take a loan with interest with a bank. So I heard this, I understood it, I thought. And when we got married, I told my wife, we're going to save up and Bezrat Shem will buy a house. But I don't want to enter a mortgage because if it's the more correct way not to enter this whole realm of paying interest, so let's not enter that realm. Over time, we'll buy a house with savings. And that's what we did. We started saving money. We were very careful never to be late on paying any bill because they'll automatically charge you interest on those bills. And we were careful in our bank account. We didn't even have an option of going into minus, so we wouldn't have. No, we made sure we signed with the bank that they wouldn't have such an option. If there's no money, don't let any checks go through. So don't write checks when there isn't money, right? Okay, so we set everything up in accordance with that. And we moved forward that way. Half a decade passed, and I had the good fortune of meeting that Rav again and having a few minutes to ask him a few questions. And I said, you know, years ago, when I was still studying in your class, you taught us this. And I just want to make sure I got it right because it's having a huge impact. We're not buying an apartment because this is what I understood. So he said, no, that's not what I meant. I said, what? He said, I meant you shouldn't make your living that way. You shouldn't make your living off of a heter. If you need to buy a house, then yes, you should take out a loan and over time pay the mortgage and rely on that leniency. Well, by then, housing prices here tripled. Meaning, had I gotten it right at the time, or had I had the humility to say, maybe I'm not 100% right, this is how I understood it in class, but then he was teaching class, he wasn't really addressing this point, I might be the owner of a nice apartment today. It's a pretty pivotal error. All good intentions aside, at the end of the day, at that time you could buy an apartment here, and we're only talking about a decade ago, you're talking about 12 years ago, saying, you could buy an apartment here for $120,000 or $115,000. Today you won't find anything for under $250,000. Those same apartments are over $300,000 and $400,000. Those very same apartments. So pretty pivotal mistake. Okay, I thought I understood, right? But if I'm going to make a decision that's so important, I should double check that I understood it correctly, right? So I'm bringing you an example from myself because I think it's a... it's important we see that, yes, we can make mistakes even when we think we understand. So if there's an area that spouses have an issue with one another, or there's an area that's going to cost you a lot to make a certain move based on a certain understanding, double check that you got it right. Maybe there is room to be more lenient. Maybe you even should be more lenient. And sometimes we have these notions that we think are so, you know, they must be this way. Some people will go to a class where they hear that Jewish people don't use birth control. So I know that's a question you want us to address later on about birth control, and that's something, God willing, we will discuss. So what happens if the woman's had a nervous breakdown and they have triplets three times in a row, and now they have 9 kids under the age of 3. They haven't had a normal night's sleep in who knows how long. After his wife's second nervous breakdown, he says, what are you talking about birth control? We're Jewish. So you sort of get the picture. You should talk to a Rav, right? And he might have gone to a class where he's convinced it's not something Jews do. I'm very sorry. If this is God's blessing, we should know how to work with God's blessing. So he can feel very pious, and he's very confident that that's what he heard. Wait a second, is it going to carry a big weight? Double check. Maybe there's something that you didn't consider. Maybe there's more for the halacha. Maybe there's more the halacha has to say on the matter. So the next point we have to really take to heart is the importance of having a rav who understands us, a rav who understands the tshuva process, a rav who can help us understand how much weight to give different things in our lives. There was a girl who got the impression in her seminary that Orthodox Jews must have beards. You can't be a good Jew without a beard. Now, her husband, when he grew his beard, would always be doing this. So he tried to explain to her, you know, I'm supposed to work at the computer, and I can't do this really well. It doesn't work. And she's like, we said we're going to be Orthodox. There are certain things Orthodox Jews do. I don't think I have to compromise on being Orthodox. And he tells her, you know, I could be a good Orthodox Jew without a beard. And she says, no, you can't. Okay? You guys are laughing, but this is very real. I'm purposely bringing you real life examples, because we can each laugh at the other guy's example. We have to have the open-mindedness to realize our own examples. And when things are of importance, instead of having ups and downs and looking at one another and saying, why is he so into this? Why is she so into this? Wait, ask. Sometimes you'll learn that there's room for leniency. There's no room for leniency. There are areas where really there is no room for leniency. Like I sometimes tell people, I can't say mutter on what the Torah says hasser. You know, there's nothing I can do. A guy once came to me and asked me about something that the Torah says you get the death penalty for. He says to me, Rabbi, what's going to happen if I do it? So I said to him, you'll burn in perdition. What do you want me to tell you? What am I supposed to say? He asked me, what's going to happen if I do what's wrong? The Torah says usher. I can't say mutter. I can't change what the Torah says. But very often, there's a lot of room for discussion, and there's a lot of room for understanding where the other party's coming from and finding a middle ground. So one of the reasons these fluctuations can have a lot of impact is because a person's trying to grow, and sometimes he's putting the stress in the wrong area. So we had a person who was growing very nicely, and he decided that on his spiritual level, the next move is to daven vasik, and he has to get up early and go daven every morning at the crack of dawn. The problem is that he didn't have a Rebbe, and he wasn't willing to have a Rebbe. And by the time he was willing, it was too late. What was the issue? He had 5 kids at home, and they were not getting up for vasikin. So Shabbos morning, he's packing out of the house at 4 o'clock in the morning to be very holy. Goes to mikveh, goes to daven. Now what happens with the kids? What happens when they wake up at 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 and never show up to shul? And by the time he was willing to ask, people tried telling it to him, but he wasn't willing to listen. By the time he was willing to listen, None of his kids were keeping Shabbos. So he had the greatest, holiest intention. He was trying to go up. But he wasn't willing to talk to a Rebbe. He didn't have a Rebbe. And the Rav in his neighborhood tried to tell him, you can't do that. That's not called being pious. What's going to be with your kids? Okay? He wouldn't listen. So one of the ways to mitigate these fluctuations is by having someone who you turn to, someone who can understand you, and talk to them. And just because you want to be holy and you feel this is holy, and you even might feel like you're growing, but your spouse is saying, I don't think this is the right move. Mutual respect and having a Rav you can turn to. If you have mutual respect, you'll hear what she has to say. If you have a Rav you could turn to, hopefully he'll help you figure out if this really makes sense to put your to invest your efforts in that direction. So there are two more aspects to the ups and downs which we have to discuss, but I get the feeling you guys want us to go over to birth control for now. So we'll pause that and get back to that next week.